Coaching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven. Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here, Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
Moscow's freeze. That's your cerebral cortex looking for an answer it doesn't have.
See? Even your brain knows you're screwed.
Your body's filling with adrenaline right now. Whether you know it or not. The heart's beating fast. It's getting a little harder to breathe. The neurobiological system is telling it to run. But your knees are too weak to move.
Fear is not real. The only place that fear can exist is in our thoughts of the future. It is a product of our imagination, causing us to fear things that do not at present and may not ever exist. That is near insanity. Do not misunderstand me. Danger is very real, but fear is a choice. We are all telling ourselves a story.
You're listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. 100% listener-supported radio. Reporting the danger. Unafraid. Right here, where information never sleeps. Revolution Radio!
Most are afraid of unknown depths, skirting shores thinking world flat. I'm with the Island Girls in celebration of new religion. Nobody led me or said this way. I sailed alone on makeshift raft with wind as companion. Fate for deliverance, confidence enough to assess. New disposition. Seekers of lost paradise may seem fools to those who never sought the other worlds. Welcome to Momentary Zen with Zen Garcia. Visit www.fallenangels.tv. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
All right. Hello and welcome, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another live broadcast. I am your host, Zen Garcia. This is Momentary Zen here on Revolution Radio. I'm not sure why the bumper music isn't coming on, but we will just flow with it and go as we will. But I hope everybody is having a great evening. It was an immaculate day. Beautiful. I don't know where all of you are, but we're here located East Coast, United States of America, outside of Athens, Georgia, where the University of Georgia is located, in a small rural, well, not so rural anymore, town called Winder, Georgia, and it is beautiful here. It was almost 80 degrees today, and spring is on its way. We have a month. March 20th will be the vernal equinox and officially the first day of spring. We have the appearance of the waxing crescent and the beginning of the month of Shavuot, the 11th month on the Hebrew calendar. And I just hope everybody is doing well wherever you may be. And tonight I'm going to be talking about a few different things, but I did want to go into and speak about Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies and just diversifying and being wise with assets and purchasing, and also your investment opportunity, because I believe that, you know, people should be smart with your ability, because we are in this world, we're all consumers, and that is the way that the governments, the elitists, the globalists, they have structured the world based upon that capacity. And I'm not saying I, you know, totally agree with it, and that I think it's correct in any manner, but our growing up, being born into, living in and coming into the matrix where economics and your credit score and your ability to survive and sustain yourself and that of your families in this world, you know, we didn't set that up. And as much as it might not be, you know, the greatest thing as far as conceptually what any of us would want to establish or want to work within, it is what it is. And so we have to learn to manage. And the gift of, you know, those of us that are these seekers of lost paradise, those that have a foot in the spiritual as well as the material world, we have to learn how to survive, manage, and make it in the best manner that we can. And I learned a long time ago that part of that journey is to utilize the circumstances that have been set up by the world for people that exist within it, to do the best that you can to be comfortable, to prosper and survive in a beautiful way. You don't want to struggle, because struggle is very stressful. And it's already hard enough to manage and make it just, you know, by yourself. And if you have good parents and good upbringing, even with that bonus, that privilege, that that gift, because that's really what it is, to have parents that love you and are concerned for you and that want to see you do better and get ahead, that is a beautiful blessing. Because it seems like in the world today, there are so many that are checked out, and there are many people that are having children that they don't even want, which is so unfortunate, because you do have so many that want children and desire to have families and to be part of a cohesive, beautiful, and loving family unit. And yet there are so many that, even with the blessing of that, have no concern and are not in any way interested. And we have the whole where the elite have established pharmakia and the precedence of having people survive by utilizing, whether it's legal or illegal drugs, the pharmakia has a great influence on the people of this world. And especially now that after the war in Afghanistan, where the United States has established an inroad with the poppy trade and with the heroin trafficking worldwide. And I'm not speaking about, as far as our country or the people of our country or the government of our country, but there are those that are in power in the shadow elite and those that have nefarious ties to the Illuminati and to secret societies and to Masonic groups, which have been utilizing, going back generations, even millennia, they have been utilizing colonialism and the ability to subjugate countries and peoples to foster the drug trade and to addict people worldwide on certain commodity. And it doesn't even have to be like anything hardcore, even though, yes, the worldwide expansion of heroin trade has damning consequence. And I don't, like to use that word, but in this case it is very appropriate. And it has lasting effect, especially on the youth of today. And so there are many people that are suffering. There are entire communities nationwide in all the various states, especially here, where drug trafficking has dominated the lives and the focus of so many people living in, growing up and just that know nothing other than the focus of using drugs to get high or to maintain normality or to even to self-medicate. And it's unfortunate because even, with the legal precedents of a lot of people that are suffering or in pain, that are dealing with disease or illness or, whatever it is, even myself with, dealing with paralysis. And there are a lot of people with a lot of different disabilities, whether mental, emotional, or physical, that unfortunately, pharmakia is so widespread that it has an influence on a lot of people's lives. And so a lot of people are dependent upon certain things to sustain their normality and their well-being. And it's, it can be an unfortunate thing if people abuse or take advantage of situation, or if they get caught up in a where they're spiraling out of control. Because certainly that's what some of the factions, some of the elitists in the world, that's what they want. They want to foster insanity, and they want people to not have control of themselves and to be dependent upon, especially the illegal use, that even with the legal prescriptions that a lot of people utilize, that is a gateway. You know, a lot of times that can now be a gateway for people getting into and involving themselves with a lot of hardcore medications and drugs that just are so overpowering that people are not able to maintain sanity. And in this world now where there are a lot of children and entire generations since the 80s and the 90s when they elevated the childhood mandatory snakebite schedule, that a lot of people have been affected and are dealing with, you know, Asperger's spectrum disorders, autism, to a certain degree. And because of that, there's a lot of OCD, you know, there's a lot of people that are struggling just to manage in the world. There's a lot of social anxiety disorder where, you know, teens are not capable of dealing with what most of the world does on a daily basis, and just, you know, going to school, getting a job, making money, taking care of oneself, raising kids if you have them, you know, families. There's a lot of parents that are concerned for their children because they see that some are just incapable of doing it in this way, and that the expectations of what so many people want, you know, for their children to just be able to grow up and to take care of themselves and to, you know, then get married, raise families, all that kind of the American dream or whatever you wanted, the Cinderella story, that there are just some that aren't going to be able to do it this way. And it's unfortunate because that's affecting the entire world. Unfortunately, the destruction of generations and the imposition of pharmakia upon the lives of the most innocent and the most vulnerable among us has, you know, really affected a lot of people. And now we see the expansion of also Alzheimer's and dementia. And myself, having dealt with this with my father, I would never wish that on anybody in the world. For anybody having to, you know, take care of your parents, that you have to go through such experience. Even for your parents, you know, like my father would wake up and not know whether to go to sleep or start his day, just because he was confused with, you know, whether it was night or day. And I could see that he was fearful that he was losing his mind. And that's got to be the scariest thing for you to be. You know, my dad was sharp his whole life. He was a computer and telephone engineer and was really intelligent with mechanical things and being able to fix things with his hands and his mind and having that kind of analytical capacity. And to see that diminish and over time to get worse, that, you know, that's a scary thing for anybody to go through. And when you're watching your loved one contend and deal with these kinds of changes, it can be an unfortunate thing. So anyways, I'm sorry, I kind of went off on a rant. But so I want to talk about, I just want to share my experience in possibly helping some of you that may be out there struggling and also dealing with hardship. Because I think, you know, that's what we're here to do. We're here to support each other, to help one another, to embrace the experience of life together, and also of what it is to come to and to learn about truth. Because without a doubt, having and seeking and finding relationship with the Most High is and can be the kindest and most rewarding experience of one's life. And to have the support of the Most High when you are struggling and suffering, and having somebody greater than any force in the world to have the shoulder of the Messiah to lean on and to cry upon, and to know that he can take care of all things and that he can resolve all issues and help one with any problem, that he is the answer for anything, any struggle, any misery, any complication that you may be dealing with, contending with. And that even when we are at our lowest, and when there seems to be no way out, no other way to restore ourselves to joy, to happiness, and to, you know, just well-being, that the Creator can do that for you. And I know that, you know, for a lot of people, a lot of you are struggling, and so I just want to send you encouragement, empower you in your walk, and to hopefully to help guide you to have the kind of relationship that I've learned to develop with the Godhead, and to have the benefit of what that entails. And I'm not just speaking about in regard to the answers or to having direction with regard to understanding the scriptures. Yes, discernment is such an incredible and beautiful thing. And I want that for all of you more than anything. But to have the daily walk of friendship and love of the Father in heaven and the Son and the Holy Spirit, that's something that, well, you know, there are a lot of people that are walking in faith and that have that kind of beautiful communion. But I know also that this is a rare kind of thing. And so my hope and my prayer is that each one of you find that, and that in finding that, you are able to share that with your children, with your loved ones, and with the family around you, that people will see that imbued within you, will see the light within you, and will respond to it. And so, anyways, okay, really quickly, we're going to talk about Bitcoin leading up to the top of the hour, and then I'm going to go into some other things, get you up with some current events, some prophecy, just, you know, the what we're contending with in the world, because these are definitely desperate times and the hour is late. But with regard to cryptocurrency, and I know that a lot of you aren't into it, which is why I'm not going to speak a long time about it. But it is something that I do believe will have a great effect upon the world, and that it will be part of the evolution of money, currency, and investment, and that the market for cryptocurrencies is still so very small. Oh, also, I want to let you know that my computer, I've had to reset it and restore it over the past couple of weeks, so I'm not able yet to log into YouTube, and I will do that at the top of the hour as well, so I'm not seeing the chat that's going on there, but I will. I don't know all my passwords, and so I'm slowly restoring everything. And those of you that know what it's like to, you know, have your computer kind of flake out on you and having to restore everything, and I had to reset everything even though I was trying to back it all up. It takes a lot to get it back to where you were before all that. And so, anyways, let me pull up really quickly as far as the market. Because those of you that have followed, and of course I'm not in manner a financial advisor, but having watched the cryptocurrency markets for so many years, I have learned and have seen the way and have learned from others also about the movements, the up and downs of the market. And I've been correct in my assessments. Those of you that have listened to the shows that I've done on Bitcoin, which, you know, again, I do try to minimize, but I told you when it was at $45,000 to go into stable currencies, to stable coins, and to farm your stable coins, pairing them against one another so there would be no loss in value. And I told you to hold that position until Bitcoin went down to within 20,000 to 18,000, 17,000, which, you know, 15,000 was our low. And that was actually $2,000 lower than I thought we would go. I felt pretty certain that once we hit 17,500 at one point, that would be the lows of the market, that we would have a double bottom, and that Bitcoin would start recovering, and that the process of returning to a bull market would eventually happen. And this is indeed where we are now, that this year, the beginning of this year, found cryptocurrency markets having a 40% rise, and that since the, you know, in 2022, we definitely had a bear market, and the markets struggled, and, you know, we went down to the lows of what was several years. But the cryptocurrencies markets have been recovering. And if you were to listen just to what I had said, this was what I had envisioned only from having watched and learned from those that have been doing this for a whole lot longer than I have. And so the whole idea of sustaining oneself through those lows and through those markets, which were, looking back now, an awesome opportunity for people to accumulate cryptocurrencies at what are some of the lowest prices that, you know, Bitcoin's ever been in its history. That really, there was a point where I did not think we would ever return to these kind of, as far as Bitcoin being 16,000, I wasn't sure we would ever reach, you know, back down into the 20,000s. And now Bitcoin is 24,130. And many of the cryptocurrencies, which were at their all-time bottoms, they have gained 20, 30, 40% from where they were just a month ago before the beginning of this year. And so I had encouraged everybody to dollar cost average. And when I say dollar cost average, I simply mean to buy when you can, and whenever at certain increments of, you know, every other week or once every month to not even worry about what the price is, but to just put in what you can every month and to build your portfolio and allow what you are able to purchase to accumulate. And that over time, especially when we were going through the lows of the market, that over time, the amount that you put in would increase in value and that you would gain as far as the breadth and the scope of your portfolio. And this is exactly what happened. And I was only speaking about this to those of you because I know that there was a lot of fear in the market, even according to the Fear and Greed Index, which is an indicator that tells you, you know, where we are at any time in the cryptocurrency markets. And I'm actually going to pull it up right now. Been a little while since I've looked at this, just to see where we are according to the indicator. So we're at a 56 right now, which is showing that we're away from that absolute fear, which was consuming the market and which people, whenever there is that kind of fear in the markets that there's blood on the streets, those are the times when you should be buying and taking advantage of what are very low prices. Because those things sometimes represent the greatest opportunities investment-wise that one may ever see. And like when the C-19 pandemic occurred and you had global asset classes, and don't make fun of just because I say and use the word global. I know without a doubt that we do not live on, that the earth is not a ball. Our world is not spherical, and that we are not moving at 1,037 miles an hour like science tries to get us to believe and buy into. I know the truth of world cosmology, and I've shared that with you, but I still make fun of you. The globalists and the idea behind all of that. Because I know, again, even with the shirts that we make on conspiracy realists, flat earthers, that water cannot adhere to a ball. And without a doubt, curvature is non-existent. And so, you know, it's my way of laughing back at them for laughing at and making fun of us. And so, right now we're in a slight position of greed, which a 56 is still a long ways from what are the 90s that we have gotten to historically, and that we will return to again. You'll see there are going to be, and it's crazy that it works like this, but it does work like this, that the fear of missing out, that people, once Bitcoin starts reaching 30,000 and 40,000 and 50,000, that for some reason, that's when people decide they need to buy and want to buy Bitcoin. And for me, it's like, why were you not buying when it was at, you know, 16,000, 17,000? Even now with Bitcoin at 24,000, why are you not buying it on a monthly basis? Because Bitcoin is not going anywhere, and it will become part of what is the normal financial markets. And we're still so far ahead of the game. And, you know, again, I'm not a financial advisor, but I do believe that people should be accumulating Bitcoin and Ethereum, and that these two cryptocurrencies are going to break the all-time highs that were set just a few years back. And for Bitcoin, that was 60-some thousand. For Ethereum, I believe that was like 4,000-something. But anyways, dollar cost average. It will change your life. It's going to make a big difference on where you are if you're just in a few years down the road. If you just take advantage of it as it presents itself right now. Because as I said, we're still so far ahead of the game. And even though, you know, like we have already entire countries that have made Bitcoin their reserve currency. Places like starts with Ecuador and other Central and South American countries that have and are now paying their employees in Bitcoin. They are going to greatly benefit at some point, even with the prices at where they are right now. In a few years, we're going to, anybody that has not been purchasing where the prices are right now, I believe you're going to be regretful. And the other things that I was talking about as far as not, and I've talked about this a lot in a lot of different shows. And again, I know that, you know, for you, my focus is on the spiritual journey, and that I try to help people with discernment in scripture and with your walk with the Most High. But I do, again, believe that just commenting and sharing my experience with investments and learning to invest and being smart with your money and your purchasing power and not getting into debt, not overspending or overextending yourself, that these kinds of decisions, especially early on when you're young, when you're 20 and 30s, you know, because it was back in my 20s that I really began to study the markets. And at that time, I was a day trader involved in, you know, online stocks, America Online and things like that, you know, the web browser, I can't remember the name of it right now, but all the Amazons and the Facebooks and all that stuff that came about with the rise of the internet. Mindspring, that was the name of it. There are so many of these companies that are no longer here, but which a lot of people made a lot of of money from, just because there was such a boom and bust at that time. I mean, you literally could throw money into anything and it would increase, just because we were in such a upward trending and fast rising bull market. And we're going to be there again. At some point, we're going to be there again. Right now, there's an abundance of money on the sideline. People are very conservative and are being careful with their investments, not wanting to lose, not wanting to squelch or dissolve what they have built up over the years. But we will reach again these all-time highs. And it's just the nature of there being a lot of people in the world and there being a lot of money where people, you know, that are making money, even if you're not making a lot. But for those that are smart with it and that are wanting to put it to work for themselves and that know better than to just blow it, these kind of individuals and this generation especially is, you know, has access to free stocks where you can buy on Robinhood, buy and sell stocks for free. And even crypto, you can buy and sell it for free. That, the, you know, there's a lot of really smart young kids out there. Even these Generation Xers. Even though there are, you know, again, the whole thing with the destruction of a generation where the mandatory vax and all that has caused a lot of suffering and affected a lot of people in a lot of different ways. But there are also a lot of people in the upcoming generations that are making investment and learning how to do the Robin Hoods and utilize, you know, farming online to increase their stake in cryptocurrencies and their value in those commodities, which most people don't even know about in regard to, you know, cryptocurrency markets and other things that are up and coming. You know, Bitcoin is digital gold. And for those that understand and realize that, and also the ability to carry it over borders and boundaries and to not have to be concerned with, as long as you're smart, you know, with your private keys, but to not have to be worried about, you know, being robbed, like if you're carrying gold, or for people that wear a lot of gold, because to me that's just ridiculous. You're just making yourself a target, in my opinion. But, you know, so just learning, and I would encourage all of you, because, you know, we have to live in this world of economics, of financial well-being, where we're going to have to always, you have to pay for your food. You have to live in a safe place, in a, hopefully in a environment where you and whoever is with you, your wife or your children, that they can grow up in comfort and not be affected by the insanity of like gangs and violence. And your children will be better for it if you can provide them a way to grow up where they're not living in fear. and they're not worried about if they're going to eat that day or if they're going to sleep comfortably. If you can take care of your kids in that way, to where you can sustain them and provide them an environment of comfort, well-being, joy, then that will inspire them to other greatness, in my opinion. If you can provide them time and space to where they can dream and you can be the example to show them how to succeed spiritually, mentally, emotionally, your kids are going to be a great benefit to the world. And we need people like that. We need kind and loving and gentle and considerate people, those that want to take care of each other and one another, and that follow the commandments of loving the Creator as we love ourselves and our neighbors. You know, those of you that have and understand what it means to, you know, have animals surrounding you that love you, and to share that kind of a pure, innocent love with another creature and with other humans and with the world. I mean, that is a beautiful thing. Lately, I've been, because there's just so much insanity. Like, I watch the weather on the news just to see, you know, how the days are going to be upcoming. And there's so much shooting, killing, and death and destruction from, you know, just the insanity of the world that I've been watching just on YouTube. Random acts of kindness and people helping others and people helping creatures in need, even wild animals that, you know, even because even in their ferocity, when they are in need, they look for a kind and helping hand. And that is a beautiful thing, where people share the stories or there's video presentation or captured where people are helping others in circumstance and situation. And, you know, when we return, maybe I'll share a couple stories with you, but it fills my heart with hope and joy to see and experience those kind of things. And I'm not ashamed to tell you that I often find myself just so deeply moved that, you know, I'm just bawling. You know, just, it's a struggle to, and I don't even want to hold back the tears, because it feels good to cry and to be emotionally vulnerable and to see, you know, people being good to other people in the way that the Most High commanded us to do with each other and for one another. And, you know, random acts of kindness, helping each other, taking care of the less fortunate, that's, you know, what our Maker told us to do. That's what He commanded in His law. And there's a reason for it. It feels good. It's a blessing to help and to share with others. Which also brings me back to another story that I will share with you at the top of the hour after we have this break. And I'm not sure if we're going to have the bumper music, but at 8:57, I will take a break as if it's going to happen, and We'll see if it does or not. But we'll be back at 9:03. And thank you, everybody, for joining us. Be right back.
Join me at Revolution Radio, Studio B, at 11 a.m. on Saturday for Free Association, when we take a look at philosophy, spirituality, psychology, social issues, and geopolitics. It's every Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern. On Studio B at freedomslips.com.
Transcending time and space, let us take you to the place inside your mind where thoughts divide and mysteries unwind. Join us every Monday evening right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. And you will catch The Fenton Perspective with our great host, Lorian Fenton. Come listen in as she shares her amazing stories from the past to present, along with all of her guest secrets to the future. That's The Fenton Perspective every Monday evening right here from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, only on Revolution Radio. Oh, and you don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal attempted to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet, not giving up. Revolution Radio. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
All right. Everybody, thank you for being so kind and patient. And again, I know that for a lot of people and a lot of you out there that you are struggling, and that you may not even be able to, as far as your next meal, or you may even be homeless, because there's a lot of that happening now in the world as well. And so when it comes to even having any money for any kind of financial investment or any kind of looking forward, that's implausible for many of you. And I'm not trying to at any way to judge you in where you may be or, where you are struggling. That myself, I've lived on disability since 1994 when I became a quadriplegic. So I know what it is like to struggle and to need help. I mean, if I didn't have the assistance of government with my care, what's called the independent care waiver, which pays for the girls that work for me to render me aid and allow me to be physically independent, I would, probably have died in a long-term care facility a very long time ago. I also have what's called the Dream Home program, where I'm allowed to utilize my what is Section 8 assistance to pay for a mortgage on a house. And fortunately, years ago, back in 2009, when this program was in existence, I was one of the fortunate ones to benefit from it. And having gone to class to get my credit, to develop credit, because I didn't even at that time have any credit, but developing good credit, I was able to qualify, and I was able to get on this program where I was able to build a house. And it also helps the government, because after, so many years, they're not going to have to help me anymore. And that assistance that I've been utilizing will go to somebody else or some other family, and they'll be able to help them in some manner that hopefully, like myself, they'll help them to, instead of paying rent on a place which enriches somebody else, to help them to qualify for a mortgage and get a house where they can raise their families. And that has been a great benefit for me and, my children and the people around me, since I've been living in this really incredible place. But I know what it's like to live in public housing and to be surrounded by gang activity and to have people literally rummage through your vehicles and every night for spare change. You know, it's like you don't even lock the doors because it's just more trouble for you to deal with them breaking into your vehicles and just allowing them to go into it to see that there's nothing there. I mean, I know that's insane, but that's the kind of world. And this was while I was going to school at Mercer University to get my bachelor's degree, you know, but to live in that kind of world, to be challenged, you know, financially. And also, there was a time when I was only me and my friend, Wesley, who was also a quadriplegic. We were only receiving 4.5 hours of care a day between the both of us. And we had a girl that came in the morning and helped us to get up and to get in our wheelchairs, and then would come back at night to put us to bed. And then the rest of the time, you know, we were basically on our own. And when you're not able to really do for yourself, like my friend Wesley was a high-level quadriplegic. He was a C4, C5, could not even move his arms. And there were a lot of times where I would help him, you know, because I did have full use of my arms, even though I couldn't use my hands and my fingers, and, you know, that I was challenged in that manner. I still was very fortunate and very blessed, and I realized this living with him. And we shared a house together. We had met in a place called Options Cottage, which was an independent care facility, which taught people that were in our situations how to be as independent as possible. And I remember, you know, back then that I would, and most people didn't even use a wheelchair, a manual wheelchair, yeah, with the high level that I had, but I would get in my manual wheelchair during the early part of the day, and I pushed myself everywhere, and got used to, you know, really trying to develop my muscles and to help myself in that manner. But I realized that debilitating over years, and that it was more of a struggle and more degrading and impactful to my body to try to put forth all that effort than it was to just, you know, utilize an electric wheelchair, which is what I do now. But I used to use both a lot in my earlier years. And that was also when I was part of the American wheelchair fencing team. And we would train, you know, I would fight in my manual wheelchair and a train in that way. But when I was done with training it, I would utilize my electric wheelchair. But anyways, let's, you know, I'm telling you all about my life and about struggle, and that's not, you know, even what I was trying to do with this show, even though I think that, you know, helping you and telling you about my own personal circumstance, that you can benefit from that, that, you know, again, for a lot of people with paralysis and that have disabilities to such degree, for those of you that are out there that may not be contending with challenge in the manner that some of us are, be very grateful and know how fortunate and how blessed you are. And do what you can. Because myself, you know, I don't cry about it. I'm not down about it. I'm not hateful or, you know, like, I don't poor pity me, that kind of thing. You know, I've been this way for a long time. It is who I am. I deal with it and I do what I can. And I've accomplished a lot, you know. And I'm not trying to be proud or boastful in any manner with the things that I've done. But I am hoping to relate to you that you can do incredible things as well. That you have the opportunity, that every day you wake up to a new dream and you wake up with the ability to even roll out of bed and get up and go outside without having to, you know, get in a wheelchair. I mean, that is a beautiful privilege. And I'm hoping that for some of you that may be down on yourselves, that are struggling mentally to find joy, because that is a disability in and of itself. And there are a lot of people that deal with that kind of disability more so than physical disability like I deal with. And my hope is to encourage you, you know, and for those of you that are out there that are doing good and that know how fortunate and how blessed and how privileged you are, God bless all of you. Yahuwah bless all of you, because, you know, we need people that are doing good, that are wanting to help others do well, and that are the example of that. We need warriors in the army of the Most High. And I was one of those, you know, before I acquired my disability, I used to train martial arts. Every day I would go to a different dojo to fight with their best. And I would use my skill set to protect the innocent. And I was a warrior in mind and heart before my body was, you know, acquired this paralysis. And I've had to learn. It's like forced meditation. Paralysis is like forced meditation. And you have to learn to be comfortable with it. Because if you struggle against it, that's of no benefit. And I think, you know, again, for a lot of people out there that are dealing with disabilities on mental, emotional, physical, whatever, you know, struggle you are having, that a lot of times we have to learn to relax and be comfortable with who we are, because you're not going to just change it. And I do believe that there will be a time where, as it was in the scriptures, that the Most High, that Yahushua, he will bless us, and that, you know, we will overcome and we will no longer have to contend with those things that we're dealing with now. But for right now, let us be comfortable in who we are and love ourselves. Also, I want to give shout out to the chat room that I did was able to log in. And so now I'm able to see the chat, and that I appreciate all of you and the kindness that of your words. You know, I'm not trying to be anyone's hero, but I am trying to be your friend, your brother, your brother in Christ. And I want all of you that have supported our ministry and that have looked to our work and have, looked to my work for answer to a lot of the things that are secretive within the scriptures, to know that, I'm here for you in the way that you're here for me. Thank you, Truth Seeker. He says, Brother Zane, your story is so encouraging. Have you written a book on your life and life experiences? And yes, I have, actually. And thank you, Daughter of Yah. I love you as well. I love all of you. Just so you know, the first three books that I wrote, they were poetry books. And I'm believing I'm going to release them again, because the copies that I published, we have sold out largely. But those three books are called Look Somewhere Different. That was my first book. And it was about my breakaway from the 9-to-5, the corporate slavery, in wanting to live life differently, to know it differently, and to do it differently than the norms and the expectations of the world. You know, to just go to school, get a job, be a good taxpayer. I knew in my heart early on that there was something that I needed to understand about my relationship with the Most High and with the world, and that I knew that God existed and that I needed to understand that at a deeper level. And so I broke away from the normal life, and I lived in a van for 4 years and traveled to all the different national parks. Ended up learning to make money by following the Grateful Dead and doing concerts and selling beer, and my friend selling grilled cheese. I mean, when we first started, doing shows, it was an easy way to make money. And we were just, having a good time and going from one state to the other, one city to the next, and hanging out with beautiful people and sharing space and time with others that also wanted to live life different than the norm. And so that was a really incredible, beautiful thing. And then I learned, I became a lifty on Jackson Hole, the mountain at Jackson Hole Ski Lodge during the winter, and spent my summers and falls just traveling around doing shows, and ended up going to massage school. And that's what I would do. I would give massages and while at the shows and make money in that manner, and snowboard during the winters. That was my life. It was a beautiful thing. And then, 1 year, lost our brakes on a mountain road and went off a cliff, dropped 85 feet, and I broke my neck on impact and became paralyzed and was forced into a life with disability. And that's when I wrote my second book. It's called When the Evening Dies, and it was basically about my travels all across the United States when I lived in a Ford Windstar van. And the first poem was dedicated to my grandmother, who passed away. My dad and I took a journey from Atlanta to New Mexico, where we were able to see her and to be with her. And she was without a doubt waiting for my father to come and visit her before she let go. And it wasn't 2 days that we were there that my dad stayed in the room with her and encouraged her to, you know, to finally, that it was okay for her to go and to cross over. And she did. And so I wrote the poem, Quando se muore, When the Evening Dies, which, of course, it was in Spanish, but wrote that poem for my grandmother and read it at her funeral and buried her with it. And then afterwards, my father flew back to Atlanta, and I went all the way across to San Diego and then took Pacific Coast Highway 1 up to Seattle, then went eastward across Montana down into Yellowstone and started going south because it was really cold in Yellowstone, but really beautiful. And the chances that I had to, you know, see Shaco Canyon in Arizona and the Northern Rim and things of that nature, those were life-changing experiences. And so I wrote this book called, you know, When the Evening Dies, about all my travels. And if you are interested in that, I do have a few copies left, and I will be republishing this book. And that tells the life story of my life before I started writing about, you know, biblical issues. And then my third book is called A Different Way of Being, because it was in that book that I acquired my disability. You know, the very first poem is about us losing our brakes on a mountain road and dropping 85 feet off a cliff in California before being flown back to Atlanta to Shepherd Spinal Center. And I'll tell you a story too, another, because there are a lot of crazy stories in my life which, you know, are deja vu and synchronicity. But it was a year or so before I acquired my disability, became paralyzed, where I was called when I was 17 years old. I went to a rehab, the court-appointed rehab, and I met this kid there, and he had dove into a lake that had a concrete bottom, and he became paralyzed. And they moved him here to Shepherd Spinal Center. And because I lived in Atlanta, they called me and asked me if I would go to visit him, to encourage him, and to just see how he was doing. And I did that. I went through with my girlfriend at the time, who ended up being the mother of my child, and the mother of Justin. We went there to visit him and to see how he was doing, and not understanding paralysis, but seeing him, he had this this contraption screwed into his head, keep his neck straight. He wasn't able to move. People had to feed him. And his family was there. They were fortunate that I had come. It gave them a chance to take a break and to go be by themselves. And So I hung out with him, and I was telling him, hey, man, fine. You know, you're gonna be better. And I did not understand at the time that I was basically lying to him. I didn't know that. I didn't understand. I didn't know the whole idea of paralysis permanent, and that his whole life was going to change, and that he was never going to be the way that he was. And, you know, I was telling you that this story is deja vu. Well, I write about it in this book, and it was, I don't know, maybe a year or 2 years later. It wasn't long thereafter that I ended up being in that same hospital and in that same room. And I remembered that once I had arrived there. And I remembered that kid's story. And I remembered, you know, visiting him and seeing him there and telling him those things and having people tell me the same when they didn't understand. You know, there would, doctors would, and I write about this too, but doctors would come into my room and try to tell me how I was going to feel or how I was going to be now that I'm paralyzed. And yet, as soon as they were done, they'd push their chair against the wall, get up, and walk out of my room. And I so wanted a hammer to smash their skulls in. And that's how angry I was at the time. Because they didn't understand paralysis. And for them to be telling me what it was going to be like. And so anyways, my third book, A Different Way of Being, it's about all of what I went through transitioning into disabilities and that whole world. And, you know, I had also told you that I have a whole nother book of poetry written that's connected to better times and better days and to where I have grown as a person, and that I've been spiritually, you know, blessed. Am I cutting out? Thank you, Daughter of Yah, for telling me. And hopefully you guys can hear me clearly. But anyways, I do have like maybe 8 copies of When the Evening Dies, my second book, and I've been holding on to those, but there's no reason for me to hold on to them. And so if you're interested, let me know, and I'll share them with you. And also, A Different Way of Being, you can just, if you're interested in that, that book is available from Sacred Word Publishing. Or you can email me if it's not. I'm not even sure if it is. Because those are books that, you know, were part of my former life and that I haven't shared a lot of because there's a lot of personal material. I mean, a lot of personal experiences and a lot of pain and suffering that I went through in overcoming to be where I am now. But, you know, as I said, I'm not embarrassed and I'm not, and most of you know my story. I mean, there's nothing to hide. You know, a lot of you know I was a New Ager and that I went through all of that at that time, following the Grateful Dead, things of that nature. But it brought me to be who I am now. And it helped me to understand and to have a relationship with the Creator in a very unique way. More so than I think anybody or most people have a chance to develop. And so if I can share that in my story and affect you and help you and touch you, and you know, not that I'm trying to be inspirational, but I'm not. You know? But if my experience can benefit you, so be it, you know? And again, I think for a lot of people that don't have the challenges of a high-level disability or some other disability, whatever it is, you know, because challenge is real for all of us, no matter what kind of level. Just making it through every day is a challenge. And so, you know, I applaud each and every one of you out there for all that you are doing. Thank you, Hebrew Hawaiian. Also, you know, again, really quickly, my first three books are poetry books. And so I write, I'm very careful with my words, and I use them to emphasize my experiences and to capture those experiences. So they're very different from the books that I wrote afterwards, which my fourth book, Lucifer, Father of Cain, my fifth book, Awaken to the New World Order, my sixth book was Sons of God, Who We Are and Why We Are Here, my seventh book, Skyfall, Angels of Destiny. And I do write a chapter in that book, chapter 15, which is about my life and my awakening and my coming to remembrance. Sean Thomas asks, do you still listen to the Grateful Dead? Absolutely. I love their music. And also, I did about 50 shows, so you know, I have a lot of experiences with the family and with being at concerts and sharing that time and space with a lot of deadheads. Ken says, Johnson, I was a deadhead too in college and had over 20 bootleg tracks. Yeah, I used to have a lot of bootleg albums. And there's a lot of that stuff on YouTube now. It's crazy that in 1994, because it was September 24th in 1994 that I acquired my disability and my life, you know, completely changed. But I had toured and I had followed the Grateful Dead for 4 years, every spring, summer, and fall. That's what I would do, was, you know, go to concerts. And so I had a chance there would be 18 shows every season. And so depending on where they were, but I traveled across the United States watching concerts and doing shows. And like I said, I have a poster frame here in my grandkids' bedroom here in my house that shows all the ticket stubs, has all these ticket stubs of the places that I went and the shows that I saw, and there's a lot of them. I'll take a picture tomorrow and post it to Facebook just so you guys could see. But again, if you are interested in my early life and my early story, message me, zengarcia2010@gmail.com, and let me know that you're interested in those books, and I'll tell you how to get hold of them. And God bless CJ Austin. She did transcribe my first book and sent me an electronic copy of it. I've been holding back. I did not want to publish it again because there's a lot of, you know, very personal material And I felt like I would be judged, but I no longer really care about that because I'm already judged. You know, people already judge me so much. And so, you know, it is what it is. My story, I've been an open book my whole life. You know, everything that I've done throughout my life, I've written about, and, you know, I'm a writer, so I share. Truth Seeker and his service, just reach out to me, and I'll be sure. And, you know, again, for those of you that are interested in my poems, I do also have a CD, an audio CD, where me and one of the girls that works for me, actually we've been friends for 20 plus years now, but anyways, she plays instruments, all kinds of instruments, and we put her music to my poems and created an audio CD, and we do have that available as well. And, you know, I never even released that to all of you, but I think it's really good. And you can find three of those poems on my YouTube channel. I wouldn't even know what to tell you. But at some point, maybe the next show, I'll find them and I'll share them with you in the chat so that you can hear them. But, let me see who it was. And I appreciate all of your commentary, everyone. Somebody said, oh, Not My Home said, I don't have the vocabulary to write. You know, I just started writing. When I was 15 years old, 16 years old, I just started writing. And I wrote poems to really, I wrote poems to girls, you know, to kind of share something on a deeper level. And I was skilled at doing it. And so it wasn't just about that. It wasn't just, you know, oh, I'm trying to get this girl to go out with me or something. But I really started to share my memories. And for some reason, I started writing for a larger audience. I just knew that 9 to 5, my inherent drive to want to know the most time, that it was unique. So I just started writing. And I think that anybody, all of you out there, can do the same. You can just start writing. And if you do it persistently and you stay with it, that your vocabulary will grow, evolve. You know, because a lot of times I found myself using words I didn't even know, and I would have to look them up. But this was the inspiration of the Holy Spirit on my life. She has always been my muse. And, you know, I didn't even know that the Holy Spirit is what leads people in inspiration creatively. And she, being part of the God, she be your muse in every way that she was. And it's just a matter of beginning. And I think that all of us, if you have something you're interested in doing, whether it's painting or drawing, writing, whatever, even if it's skateboarding or snowboarding or some kind of physical activity, whatever it is that you have an interest in doing, just do it. Just do it. And over time, and being persistent with it, you're going to learn to master it. And what I learned about martial arts, about punching and hitting, you know, punching bags, and breathing, and, you know, I used to meditate, and to sit with my breath and feel, you know, to really breathe. And meditation is also about learning to lucid dream, to enter into the dream state. But that's something at a whole different level. I've talked about all that too. You can find my shows on lucid dreaming and all that as well. But anyways, what I learned is that the mindset that you have in a moment, if you can bring your complete entire focus of your being into that one moment, and you can focus your complete skill and ability, and no matter what it is you're doing, we can learn to master anything, and we can become good at anything, and that you can become, you know, like the Renaissance people that were skillful with all that they did, like Michelangelo and Leonardo da Vinci, these kind of people that applied themselves with all of their studies. We can do the same. I was not related to Jerry or Andy from the Grateful Dead. A lot of people ask me. Who knows? You know, maybe somewhere it felt all. With regard to the Grateful Dead, some of my most favorite songs are Broke Down Palace, Addicts of My Life, They Love Each Other, Wharf Rat. There's so many beautiful songs. Nothing that they played on the radio, because their best music was never played on the radio. You had to go to a show, be there with the people, be in the mindset, and be moved by the music to understand what I'm talking about. Because most people, you talk about their music, and you know, they never connected. They never connected. And I was the same way. I remember for several, it was even several years, my best friend was a Deadhead. He went to Savannah College, art and design. He was all in creative, you know, stuff. And I was a martial artist. But I loved him as a brother. I hung out with him. And we used to listen to Deadhead. And it never clicked for me until one night when I was in such a beautiful mind space and listening to the album Reckoning. And there was a song, To Lay Me Down. This beautiful song, To Lay Me Down. And I felt it. And once I felt the Grateful Dead's music move through my soul, it brought me to tears. It literally brought me to tears. And when that happened to me, I never heard them the same again. And I understood what it was like to be profoundly touched by music and in that way. And there's not many bands that can do that to you. In my opinion, not that, you know, I've ever experienced. And so, but I love all of you. Thank you for joining me this evening and for listening to me, you know, just tell kind of my personal story. I didn't really know what I was going to cover in show anyways, because I've been just catching up. You know, and as you can tell, my voice is getting stronger, so I appreciate all of you praying for me. Donna Smith asks, Lucid Dreams on YouTube. Yes, you can look up Zen Garcia and Lucid Dreaming, and I cover all of that in great detail. Because I was and had learned how to lucid dream in my early years of my spirituality when I was involved in shamanism. And I still have lucid dreams, even to this day. I can still sometimes, when I focus hard enough, enter into dreaming consciously. Or I'll remember that I am dreaming, you know, or I'll be in a dream and I'll know that I'm dreaming. And I, like I told the story of how when I first used to awaken in my dreams, I would try to fly and I would flap my arms like a chicken, which is utterly ridiculous. And if you know anything about lucid dreaming now, you'll understand you're probably laughing at me and, you know, what I'm telling you about. Because when you're in your dream, you use your will. And so you have to project your thought forward. And that's the way you move. It's your will that guides you and controls your movement. And in a dream, you know, there's no physical barriers or limits. You can walk through walls. I mean, you can do all kind of crazy stuff. You can, like, I flew out and towards the moon, and I got so far away from the plane of the earth that it literally frightened me, and I woke up back in my body. Because if you get too emotionally charged while you're in a dream state, you'll find yourself back in your body. The idea of lucid dreaming is that you control your emotion, that you're able to. Thank you, Bruno. I appreciate that so much, brother. He says, I appreciate it. Around you and your family. Appreciate that so much. I love all of you as well. But with darkness, you control your emotion, and you have to. Like your body system. Because if you are breathing a soft repetition and a deep breath, then you'll come back to your body and you're not able to dream. But if you can, learn to relax and learn to keep yourself in the dream while your dreaming is happening. That's when you can start to manipulate the dream. You can start praying to the Most High, which is the most incredible thing you can do. If you ever wake up in a dream and you ever go lucid in a dream, is sit down and pray to your God right there in that moment, wherever you may be. As soon as you wake up, get on your knees before the Most High. Pray to him, share tears of gratitude, thanksgiving to him, and that will be a very incredible and special moment. Because for us to be able to waken in a dream, that is a very powerful, powerful thing. There's not a lot of people that can do that. You know, most people don't even remember their dreams. They don't even care to remember their dreams. Dreaming and the life that we have in our dreaming, for most people, has nothing. There's no contribution, no benefit, no willingness to even try to remember or retain. But I tell you that dreaming is one of the most important activities of our life. And it is the way that you can commune and communicate with the Godhead. And if you understand what I just said, you'll really, if you can tap into that, you'll really understand the privilege and the awesomeness of being able to access that space. There's a song that Queensryche this group that I used to love, because they are very, their lyrics are very conscious, and they wrote about things that they learned, but they wrote a song called Silent Lucidity. And in the middle of it, they tell you that if you are able to awaken to your dreams and that you are able to apply yourself to remembering that you can actually control your dreams. And when I heard that song, because I was a lucid dreamer at the time, it blew my mind. For somebody else to know that, for this group to know that, and to be able to, and to, their, the name of the band is Queensryche. Q-U-E-E-N S-R-Y-C-H. And the name of the song is Silent Lucidity. It's a beautiful song. I think you will enjoy it. But right in the middle of the song, they tell you about what they learned. And it's the same thing that I learned some 30 years ago. And it was about learning to go lucid in your dream and to control your dream. And that really, that, I mean, it's one, it's like a metaphysical secret. It's like one of the secrets of the world. It's like, I can't even explain it. Can't even explain it. Because words fail to describe the benefit. Because remember, all of the prophets spoke to the Most High through their dreaming. They received messages. They received prophecy. They received prediction. They had deja vu moments. And there's, you know, there's nothing that locks you away from that either. Except that our culture doesn't emphasize that dreaming is important, even though we spend one third of our lives doing it. Most people don't even care to remember what they dreamt about the night. Now, I'm not talking about channeling dreams. Dreams are what you have every night. It has nothing to do with channeling. Dreaming is just dreaming. It's what your body naturally does every night when you go into that space. We've got just a couple minutes remaining. Perhaps I'll do a show on this at some point, but just look up the one that I've done. And I've done a couple of them, because this is something, again, that I learned a long time ago that most people don't know. And I studied in college. Part of my anthropology degree was to, well, I didn't, that wasn't my major. I studied what other people and other tribes thought of it with their dreaming and how they emphasize dreaming in their daily affairs, in their daily activity. Because a lot of people hold dreams as more important than anything else. And they put the focus of that on when they wake up. All right. God bless all. Bye.
Did you ever feel that things were not quite right? That everything was just ever so slightly askew.
Do you have, to paraphrase Morpheus, a splinter in your mind?
If you're interested in hearing the latest information about UFOs, the paranormal,
ancient cultures and structures,
monatomic elements,
longevity,
fantastic discoveries in science,
download it to your brain,
then tune in to us. Hi, I'm Dave.
And I'm Mackie.
And we are Shiny Side Out, Sundays 2 to 4 a.m. Eastern. See you then.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Many years from now, would you be willing to trade all the days from this day to that for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom?